Hello and welcome to the first Lancet HIV podcast for 2019. Today I'm delighted to be speaking with Dr. Stephanie Cohen, who is an assistant professor at UCSF in the Division of Infectious Diseases and is also the medical director of San Francisco City Clinic, which is a municipal STD clinic in San Francisco. Today we're going to be discussing a study that Stephanie and her colleagues have had published in the January issue of the journal that reports a case of a man in San Francisco who contracted HIV while taking pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP for short. Stephanie and her team measured the man's adherence to PrEP, and they also determined the genetic and the phenotypic drug resistance profile of the acquired virus. Stephanie, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we discuss your study, could you tell us a little bit about PrEP access and uptake in the United States broadly, and how that situation compares to where you work in San Francisco?
PrEP use has really been increasing rapidly in the United States since it was approved by the U.S. FDA in July 2012, and there are now an estimated 200,000 people using PrEP in the U.S. based on a report that was presented at the R4P conference in Madrid of this year. There are an estimated 1.2 million Americans, though, who are at substantial risk for HIV, so we're still only reaching a fraction of those who could benefit. And in addition, there are disparities in use in some of the populations with the highest incidence of HIV, including young, Black, and Latino men who have sex with men, have the lowest rates of PrEP use, and also have lower rates of adherence to PrEP and retention in PrEP care. But it's important to note and to celebrate that in jurisdictions in the U.S. where we have high rates of PrEP use, we are seeing declines in new HIV infections. This is definitely happening here in San Francisco, where the number of new HIV diagnoses declined by 52% from 2012 to 2017, and this was due to a number of factors, including expanded PrEP use. And in a study recently published in The Lancet HIV, Andrew Grulich and others reported a 25% decline in new diagnoses in just a one-year period across New South Wales, Australia, and that was after rapid, targeted, and high-coverage rollout of PrEP. PrEP uptake here in San Francisco has really been quite remarkable, and I think there's a lot of reasons for this. We have an amazing community of activists and advocates here who've been really working since the very beginning of the epidemic to fight for the rights of those living with and affected by HIV. And their work has really included pushing the research community to look for new and better approaches to prevention. And researchers in San Francisco, including Robert Grant, who's a co-author on this project, and also Albert Liu, led the global IPREX study, which was the first to demonstrate that daily PrEP was a highly effective approach for preventing sexual transmission of HIV for men who have sex with men and also trans women. So when the US FDA approved Truvada for PrEP in July 2012, here in San Francisco, we already had an enthusiastic group of men who have sex with men who were ready to be early adopters of this new prevention tool. And those early adopters started taking PrEP, started spreading the word about PrEP, and from that point, PrEP uptake has risen exponentially here. And population-based surveys show that as of 2017, about 38 to 45% of sexually active HIV-negative MSM in San Francisco were on PrEP. That's about 16,000 to 20,000 people, and that's one of the highest rates of PrEP use in the U.S. That said, here in San Francisco, just like in the rest of the country, we do struggle with disparities in PrEP use. So at the health department and with our partnering community-based organizations, we're really trying to increase PrEP knowledge, access, and use among those who aren't using PrEP at equally high rates. And that includes people of color, as well as trans women, cisgender women, and people who inject drugs.
So your paper describes a case of a man who became infected with HIV despite reporting very high adherence to PrEP. Could you explain for us how adherence to PrEP is normally ascertained and why your team chose to do a more detailed pharmacological analysis in this particular case?
In clinical practice, PrEP adherence is primarily assessed by self-report. For instance, in the PrEP program here at our STD clinic, we routinely ask our patients on PrEP how many doses they missed in the last week, in the last month, and when they took their last PrEP pill. And we provide enhanced adherence counseling to those who are missing doses. In this case, we chose to do a more detailed analysis because our patient became infected with HIV despite reporting excellent adherence to PrEP. This is an extremely rare event. Typically, when someone does acquire HIV despite using PrEP, they are either able to identify gaps in their PrEP use, or it's clear from pharmacy refills or visit follow-up data that they were not using their PrEP regularly. So this was really surprising and concerning for us. And understanding, you know, whether and how HIV acquisition can occur in the face of daily PrEP is really important, you know, both to individuals using PrEP, to providers who are prescribing it, and to researchers who are trying to develop the most effective HIV prevention tools. So for those reasons, we felt it was important to really determine whether or not this individual was taking his PrEP regularly, and he was also interested in understanding what had occurred. So we chose to analyze PrEP drug levels in different segments of the patient's hair because that gives us an idea of long-term adherence over time. We also measured drug levels in dried blood spots, which give an idea of adherence over the past 6 weeks, as well as PrEP drug levels in a plasma sample, which ascertains short-term adherence. So this gives us a different picture of how he was doing taking his pills at different points in time, and all of these values were high, verifying his self-report of high levels of adherence.
From the published literature, we know that there have been 5 other reported cases of HIV seroconversion, despite people having very high adherence to PrEP. Could you tell us a bit about what your study adds to these previous reports of PrEP breakthroughs?
Well, this is really the most comprehensive evaluation of a PrEP breakthrough infection to date, with both pharmacologic and viral testing. And so it really provides the most robust evidence that acquisition of tenofovir-susceptible HIV can occur in the setting of daily PrEP use. In 3 of the 5 previously reported PrEP breakthroughs, there are some questions about whether or not HIV acquisition actually occurred during a period of high adherence. For instance, in one of the cases, which was reported from North Carolina, the patient had a long period without HIV testing in between when he started PrEP and when he eventually became diagnosed with HIV. The pharmacologic testing in that situation that was performed at the time of diagnosis did show that he had been adherent in the months leading up to his diagnosis, but it's possible that he had acquired HIV at an earlier time point when he was not taking his PrEP regularly because he was not followed very regularly in care. And similarly, in one of the other 5 previously reported cases from Thailand, the patient was tested with only an HIV antibody test when he started PrEP, and antibody tests can miss HIV if it was acquired in the prior few weeks. So the patient in Thailand may have actually already been infected with HIV at the time he started PrEP, as opposed to being on PrEP and then acquiring HIV at a later date. So in our case, we measured both long-term and short-term pharmacologic markers of adherence, and we were really able to determine the timing of HIV acquisition and therefore show that HIV acquisition occurred during a period of high adherence.
Given that what your methods were able to really ascertain is that your patient in this case acquired HIV during a time of high adherence, and given the drawbacks that come along with self-reported adherence, do you think that the sorts of in-depth pharmacological and genetic analyses that you did in this case might find a place in routine clinical care for individuals who acquire HIV while taking PrEP?
Well, routinely measuring pharmacologic markers of adherence throughout PrEP care is really not necessary for the vast majority of patients using PrEP. To do so would really add to the cost of PrEP. And, you know, right now our priority is getting PrEP out into the hands of as many people who could benefit from it. And in some resource-limited settings with high HIV prevalence and high HIV incidence, even measuring kidney function can be cost-prohibitive. To suggest that we also need to measure drug levels routinely, I think, would be quite cost-prohibitive and wouldn't add a lot to PrEP care. That said, pharmacologic metrics of adherence are increasingly available for PrEP breakthroughs, so when someone does acquire HIV while taking PrEP. And particularly when the etiology of the PrEP breakthrough is unclear. For instance, you can't clearly demonstrate that there were lapses in PrEP use. There is a study at out of the University of California, San Francisco, led by Bob Grant, called the SeroPrEP study. And in that study, clinicians from all over the world can reach out through an online portal and receive a kit from which they can collect biologic samples for objective measures of adherence testing. In addition, Dr. Peter Anderson, who's a co-author on our project from the University of Colorado, has validated the measurement of intracellular tenofovir diphosphate and emtricitabine triphosphate levels using dried blood spots, and he's validated that assay for clinical use. And various groups, including Dr. Monica Gandhi's, are working on point-of-care objective measurements of PrEP adherence using pharmacologic measures, for instance, via a urine-based tenofovir immunoassay. And that could be administered in real time at a low cost. So I think when available, these types of low-cost point-of-care assays could be a powerful and rapid way to identify patients with who aren't doing as well taking their medications, and perhaps to provide them enhanced counseling or retention support. And then lastly, pharmacologic measures of adherence have been absolutely critical for measuring the efficacy of new biomedical HIV prevention tools when we're doing randomized clinical trials. So I think they're essential in the clinical trial setting, and I think they could potentially play an important targeted role in clinical care, but that's not yet ready for prime time.
We know that from previous studies that when taken as directed, PrEP is very effective in preventing the acquisition of HIV, and although few, the reports of PrEP breakthrough infections so far are nonetheless concerning. From a public health messaging standpoint, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on what we think we need to consider when we're communicating these kinds of findings beyond a clinical or academic audience to the general public.
The most important message is that PrEP is by far one of the most effective HIV prevention tools that we have. It has already changed the course of the HIV epidemic, and if we can further improve access, uptake, adherence, and retention, I really think that PrEP will help us get to zero with the HIV epidemic, and by that I mean zero new HIV infections. So this report should in no way dissuade individuals who are considering using PrEP. In fact, the whole idea that this case is newsworthy is really a reflection of how rare of an event this was. That said, like pretty much every other medical intervention we have, including vaccines, PrEP is not 100% effective. PrEP also does not prevent other STDs. So individuals using PrEP should be counseled about both of those issues and encouraged and supported in making decisions that align with their sexual health goals. Additional tools to promote one's overall sexual health include using condoms and getting tested for STDs as well as HIV regularly. And here in the U.S., for men who have sex with men, we recommend every 3 months testing for HIV and STDs.
Okay, well, I think my final question follows on quite well from that. Going forward, what place do you see PrEP as having in HIV prevention in the States? And what kind of support do you think individuals are going to need to ensure that they can access PrEP and that they can adhere to their medication?
Until we have a vaccine and a cure for HIV, I think PrEP will continue to play a core role in HIV prevention in the United States. And we still have a lot of work to do to improve PrEP knowledge, access, and use for many populations that are at elevated risk for HIV. And to really advance in that, in those areas, we need more collaboration, we need humility, and we need innovation. Stigma is a big issue here, and figuring out how to address stigma is critical, as is continuing to advocate for policies that ensure universal access to health care, which is something we do not have in the United States. The good news is that there are innovative approaches to PrEP that I think will further expand uptake and adherence. For instance, the use of intermittent PrEP, which is sometimes referred to as 2-1-1 or event-based PrEP, and is much more common in Europe and in the UK than it is in the US, that may be a more acceptable option for some individuals who have opted out of daily PrEP. And when available, long-acting injectable PrEP, I think, will really be a game changer, especially for those whose life situations make remembering to take a daily pill challenging. We also need more systems innovations to make accessing PrEP as easy as possible. It can be burdensome to come into a brick-and-mortar clinic setting and schedule appointments and wait, especially if you're needing to come in every 3 months. So express visits for PrEP, pharmacist-delivered PrEP, these are all different ways that we can make this a low-barrier intervention for people to take advantage of. And then lastly, once someone has started on PrEP, achieving high levels of adherence and staying on the medication through ongoing periods of risk is challenging. And this challenge with adherence and retention is also true for those living with HIV. So I think we also need tools to support long-term retention and adherence to both PrEP and HIV care to really help propel us to zero.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, very much for speaking with us today and sharing your expertise. It's been a real pleasure. I wish you all the best for your future work, and we will certainly be watching with interest how PrEP is scaled up in the United States going forward.
Thanks so much for inviting me to speak with you today.
Thank you.